Jesus.
Yell out what?
I'm walking here. I'm walking.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Jason Rant Show, live on AM 770 KTTH and 94.5 FM for our friends on the Greater East Side. We finally found someone who held on to a job shorter than Anthony Scaramucci. Remember him? Oh, that's what's trending.
What's trending? Follow up.
Well, Ronna McDaniel is out of a job. She's done. Queen Rachel Maddow called her out yesterday. Rachel Maddow, who can only work one day a week. Kind of lazy, like Jon Stewart. But she had become the highest profile voice calling on NBC to cut ties with Ronna McDaniel. And we found out that's precisely what it is they did. They put out a statement saying, okay, we're out. In fact, they apologized. Oh, my God. The NBCU News Group chairman, Cesar Conde, wrote a letter to the entire company, came out like 30 minutes ago, 40 minutes ago, saying there's no doubt that the last several days have been difficult for the news group. Oh, it's been so difficult. After listening to the legitimate concerns of many of you, I've decided that Ronna McDaniel will not be an NBC News contributor. But she will probably get a huge payday because I guarantee you if she had already signed that contract, which I think she has, means they're going to pay out the entirety of it. Then she's going to go to another network, probably this time a conservative network, and get precisely the exact same contract. So she will have been paid for the same job two times, having only done one single interview that was about 20 minutes long that she was going to do anyway. No organization, particularly a newsroom, can succeed unless it is cohesive and aligned. Over the last few days, it has become clear that this appointment undermines that goal. I mean, after all, she is a Republican woman, and we can't allow that to happen on our network. This is NBC News. This is the home to Jen Psaki. Oh, yes, we're not supposed to mention her because we're supposed to pretend that there's no clear similarity between the issues that she poses to our credibility and Ronna McDaniel. I added that last bit. I want to personally apologize to our team members who felt we let them down. While this was a collective recommendation by some members of our leadership team, I approved it and take full responsibility for it. Well, I mean, did you just take full responsibility for it? Because you probably didn't have to mention the whole idea that other people were the ones who greenlit it, but then you ultimately signed it. Because it does kind of sound like you're trying to spread some of the blame. That doesn't seem appropriate, does it? Our initial decision was made because of our deep commitment to presenting our audiences with a widely diverse set of viewpoints and experiences, particularly during these consequential times, which is kind of odd because I can't really name any of the conservative voices that have appeared on NBC, certainly not MSNBC, unless, of course, it's the one-offs where someone ends up challenging Joy Reid to an actual debate, but she's too dumb to realize she's going to lose, so she goes ahead and invites him on. Christopher Rufo, and then completely gets humiliated but pretends otherwise. And then you go online, you see the same troll accounts over and over and over again saying, oh, you killed him. Oh, you were so good. Even though no one actually believes that, including Joy Reid when she really is honest with herself. It continues. We continue to be committed to the principle that we must have diverse viewpoints on our programs. And to that end, we will redouble our efforts to seek voices that represent different parts of the political spectrum. Although, Jason Renz, do not hold your breath because we're definitely not going to call on you. We don't want to push your book, What's Killing America Inside the Radical Left's Tragic Destruction of Our Cities, which is on sale for $18.99 on Amazon.com. And by the way, yes, he does get paid every time he mentions that. Thank you. I think that was about it. And then it signs his name. It says, I was going to stop, but you know how some people say best regards or thanks or respectfully at the end? You know what this dude signs it?
What'd he say?
Take care. That's just too casual. Take care. He doesn't even sign his full name. He just says, he's one of those people.
Just call me by my first name.
People who do that, by the way, it's a test. And if you truly do call them by their first name and not sir, they're judging you for it, and they're going to remember. Whenever someone who's really important, high on the top of the totem pole says, oh, no, please just call me whatever their first name is. No, you better still say sir or ma'am. What's my name?
It's Mr. Rance.
Exactly. So Rachel Maddow last night, she started off her just insufferably self-important monologue this way.
We stand up for ourselves as a way of standing up for our country.
Oh, a hero.
And for our Constitution, the First Amendment to which makes it possible for us to exist.
Oh, thank God for that First Amendment.
And so I want to associate myself with all my colleagues, both at MSNBC and at NBC News, who have voiced loud and principled objections to our company putting on the payroll. Someone who hasn't just attacked us as journalists. But someone who is part of an ongoing project to get rid of our system of government.
They're trying to get rid of our system of government. Attack us as journalists, i.e. criticize us. Call us out when we lie. MSNBC is quite literally a network that is the propaganda arm for Democrats. There's no diversity of opinion on MSNBC. Seriously, what's the diversity of opinion? You've got far left and really, 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 really far left, and you mix in, I guess not everyone there's an anti-Semite. That's diversity. That's ideological diversity. Some of them hate Jews, others don't.
It's kind of like the Bolsheviks and the Mensheviks.
Yeah, you know what you just said. 100%. I get that reference, just like everyone listening. It's one of those things where they want to sound like they're doing this and taking it seriously. They want to sound like they're truly journalists. Rachel Maddow is not a reporter. She's not a news person. She provides analysis. I provide analysis. I'm not a reporter. Some people sometimes, oh, you're a reporter. No, I'm not. You're biased. Yeah, I'm owning it. I say I'm a conservative. I don't hide that. Rachel Maddow, to her credit, she doesn't pretend that she's some journalist, but she talks like she thinks she's one. And she knows that that is going to convince some of you that, oh, maybe she does have a point. This is a serious journalist. You have Jen Psaki on MSNBC, quote unquote, attacking us as journalists. Do you remember this? She said this on Pod Save America while she was still the press secretary.
We have to talk about Peter Doocy for 1 second.
Sure.
Is he a stupid son of a bitch? Or does he play a stupid son of a bitch on TV?
He works for a network.
Uh-huh. Okay.
That provides people with questions that nothing personal to any individual, including Peter Doocy, but might make anyone sound like a stupid son of a bitch.
Oh my God, she's attacking journalists! Oh, but see, it's okay to go after Peter Doocy because he works at Fox News. It's okay to go after Fox News. It's okay to give voice to the folks who want to take away the license to broadcast Fox News. That's okay. That's not an attack on journalists because people like Rachel Maddow don't see them as actual journalists. They don't see them as members of the media. So they would never, ever, ever condemn something like that over at MSNBC. Is she attacking a journalist? Oh, it's just Peter Doocy.
If you care what I think about this, I will tell you the fact that Ms. McDaniel is on the payroll at NBC News, to me, that is inexplicable. I mean, you wouldn't.
What's really inexplicable is you still talk like this? I don't understand why no one has told you that it sounds really awful.
You wouldn't hire a wise guy. You wouldn't hire a made man like a mobster.
Okay, wow. Would you watch an episode of The Sopranos last night? Really? That's where you're going? Please continue, Chris Hayes. Rachel Maddow.
To work at a DA's office, right? you wouldn't hire a pickpocket to work as a TSA screener.
I mean, actually, I probably would.
And they so I find the decision to put her on the payroll inexplicable. And I hope they will reverse their decision.
Yeah, well, they did. What do you mean inexplicable, by the way? Again, if you were at a serious organization that truly is nonpartisan, or at least attempts to be, News Nation, I think, probably qualifies the closest to that, but no one watches News Nation. Not yet, but they've been growing somewhat in popularity. They've got their traditional left and right, kinda, but they started off and their news program is all about just straight down the middle. Are they perfect? No, but they're the closest to it, I guess. If that what MSNBC actually was, okay. She can be all high and mighty if she wants. But again, this is coming from someone who is a hyper-partisan. Hyper-partisan. At least Chuck Todd pretends not to be hyper-partisan. He pretends. Kristen Welker pretends not to be hyper-partisan. She doesn't. But she's the one giving us the lecturing. Because she's all about truth and honesty. She would never push propaganda. She's always right, except for that one time about the Russian disinformation, which she spent an entire show talking about how, oh, look at all this evidence. It's Russian disinformation. The laptop isn't real. It's a figment. Hunter Biden doesn't even use a laptop. Well, who's Hunter Biden?
Means for instead of the virus Remember being this? Able to hop from person to person to person to person, spreading and spreading, sickening uh-huh. some of them, but not all of them. And the ones that it doesn't sicken don't know they have it. And then they give it to even more people.
No, I know how
they
the
didn't
virus
recognize
works.
They were. Right. Instead of the virus being able to hop from person uh-huh. to person to person.
You just said that.
Potentially mutating and becoming more virulent
Again, we
and
got
drug
that.
Resistant
Get to
along
the point,
the way.
Lady.
Now we know that the vaccines work well enough that the virus stops.
What? We know well enough she never gets anything wrong or purposely misleads. Because even after it became clear that the COVID vaccine didn't work the way that they had all told us, instead of saying, our bad, sorry, we trusted and didn't verify, they just continue to spread the lie over and over and over again. But remember, Ronna McDaniel says something that she didn't like. It was a lie. And she's trying to go after democracy as we know it. And of course, Jen Psaki had to speak up because everyone is making the point. Poor Jen Psaki. People forget she's even on MSNBC with the show. I don't even know what is her show on MSNBC Daily?
I think it is. I don't watch it. So,
or is it like a digital only? Because is it even on? I know she's on MSNBC. I just did not know she did a show regularly.
I mean, my family would disown me if I watch MSNBC.
Okay, that's a loving
regularly,
family, right?
So.
There. That is a loving family. That's a loving family. Pray that you have a family like that protecting you from MSNBC. But she's the one who is being compared to the Ronna. But it's like, who? See, how could you complain about Ronna when you have Jen? So she decided to really stick up for herself. And of course, she's a hero.
And some, mainly in the right-wing ecosystem, have made the comparison to others who have come from government or politics into the media, including me.
Oh.
And that is a comparison I felt like I had to address.
She just had to.
I got into public service for the same reason that many people do.
Help everyone.
To serve the American people.
Yeah.
I worked on my first political campaign when I was just 24 years old. When I was 28, I packed my bags. I moved to Chicago to work for Barack Obama.
Wow.
He wanted to make the country a better place.
Oh.
And I wanted to help him. I wanted to work on behalf of the American people to try to make their lives better. That's why I did campaigns.
I mean, well, if she puts it that way. I mean, of course, everyone on the other side of her ideologically, they just joined for selfish reasons they hate the country. They're just doing it to better their purses and wallets and bank accounts. That's the only reason Republicans get involved. Can't you all be like Jen Psaki? She does it for the right reasons. And Ronna McDaniel, shame on her. Shame on her. She's not even a Republican. She doesn't even believe anybody. She's a grifter. Let's just throw that term out because everyone loves to use that term.
Look, this isn't about Republicans versus Democrats. This isn't about red versus blue. This is about truth versus lies. Service to the country versus service to one man committed to toppling our democratic system.
Ugh. They cannot get over that one talking point. And my God, did Donald Trump break these people? I mean, they are forever broken. They give this guy so much power over them that they can no longer think straight. Like, she's a real believer in what she says. I think she's legitimately mentally unwell when it comes to Trump. I legitimately believe that of Rachel Maddow / Chris Hayes / Joy Reid / Lawrence, whatever his name is, O'Donnell. Like, these people are sick in the head because of Donald Trump, and this is all they can think of. And it's impossible for them to understand that there might be some conservatives who actually do care about this country, and you're not the only one who does. I generally will give the benefit of the doubt to someone who disagrees with me, unless they're the most extreme voices, that we have a simple disagreement on how to better insert whatever the topic of interest is, how to tackle homelessness better, how to keep our country safe, how blah, 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 blah. I will generally accept that we just disagree, but we still want the same end goal. Why is it that on the left, especially on the radical left, they can never just at least understand that? They can never even present it as a possibility. To them, it's not possible that someone who disagrees with them might still want what's best for the country or their own community or the world. No one can understand that over at MSNBC. And that's why they talk like this. And they, of course, convince themselves that they are so high and mighty. They never lie. Maybe they'll withhold some of the truth sometimes, which is called a lie when you do it knowingly, but they're doing it for the greater good. in service of maybe, let's just say, one guy.
And the president has said that he never spoke to his son about his overseas business dealings. Is that still the case?
Yes.
Huh. Well, that's not true. Did you just say that in service of one guy that you're hoping to help? You want to keep him in power and you're willing to say and do absolutely anything to protect him, to keep him there? Weird how that all works out.
It's broadly known and widely known, Peter, that there was a broad range of Russian disinformation back in 2020.
Why is the administration flying thousands of migrants from the border to Florida and New York in the middle of the night?
Well, I'm not sure that it's in the middle of the night.
It was in the middle of the night. Like, that's an established fact. We have proof of that. And the administration eventually actually acknowledged that as a truth. Now, you can argue, and I'm sure she will, she didn't have that information at the time. Okay, did you ever come back and apologize for it? No, of course not. You pretended that none of that actually happened, which hurts your credibility when you're telling us that you're all about the truth over at MSNBC. Blah. That's all I have. Thank you and good. Oh, I'm still good. Okay, push the button.
What's trending? Happening now.
So out in Spokane, they are trying to figure out what they're going to do with one effect of the homelessness crisis. One effect happens to be it's really, really, really dirty in Spokane, particularly downtown. And so they plan to move millions of dollars into their efforts to clean up the city. Unfortunately, probably going to be millions of dollars that end up getting wasted. Now, I have no problem cleaning dirty things up, except for in my bathroom. Other than that, I totally understand. The problem is, it's just going to get dirty again. Now, the Spokesman Review says that their new mayor is trying to clean up downtown, especially using millions in tax dollars from the state, possibly millions more from federal funds. They say, quote, some of that entails literal cleanup, with the state agreeing to reimburse at least $440,000 through 2025 for city cleanup crews at gateways along state transportation corridors within city limits. The state is working to potentially allocate another $400,000 for these efforts. The city also has $2.5 million left over from last year's allocation from the State Department of Commerce's right-of-way program, meant to get homeless people living on state property into shelter and housing. Yeah, we definitely don't want to do that, so let's put this into cleaning graffiti and human waste on sidewalks that they're going to graffiti again and poop on again once you clean it all up. The city expects to submit a plan in the next week or so to request an additional $4 million, because money grows on trees, and hopes to use a significant portion of that $6.5 million to assist with removing the homeless population from around the Division and Brown Street corridor. Awesome. That seems to be okay, unless you're trying to put them solely into homeless housing that's permanent. Look, here's a way that this can actually work. You can look at Santa Fe. Santa Fe, several years ago, under their Republican mayor, implemented a pretty simple idea. We're going to pay the homeless to clean the city up. Now, obviously, this is not going to work with all homeless people. You have to get people who aren't dealing with a mental illness or a severe addiction. But what they did was they pick them up in a van. It actually sounds kind of shady when you say it that way, but I'll go with it. And then they drop them off with supplies, and they just pick up litter. And they all get paid. They were paid whatever the minimum wage was in the city at the time. And not Santa Fe, excuse me, Albuquerque. And it worked. They felt really good about themselves because for the first time in a long time, they had a job, they had responsibilities, they had a purpose, and they were rewarded for it. And when you're living on the street as long as some of these people have, they get the same feeling you got when you had that first job and you got your first paycheck after you got over the fact that they take how many taxes out of my paycheck? But then you felt really good about it because you accomplished something. That's how they felt. And for some of them, it was enough to get them to come back again and again and again and start not just putting cash in their hands, but get them on the right path. No judgments because they didn't have access to a shower or a shave. Nothing like that. They went around and helped. If they want to do that in Spokane, I think that that would be a worthy cause. Show them that actually you can keep down a job. It might not be a glorious, glamorous job, but it's work that needs to be done. And by the way, you are kind of responsible for all the litter all around the place. Not all of it, but a lot of it. Let them do that. If you're not going to do that, this is putting a Band-Aid on a bullet wound. The homeless are the ones who are responsible for the majority of what needs to be cleaned up in downtown Spokane. Same is true in Tacoma. Same is true in Seattle, Bellingham. That is the unfortunate reality. Unless they disappear, they're going to continue to do precisely what it is they did that's causing you to spend millions and millions and millions of dollars to clean it all up again. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? Let's get political.
There's some problems for Republicans right now in the House where there is legitimate concern that they might lose their majority before this election because you have more Republicans stepping forward and saying, I'm a peace out a little bit early. I'm done. The latest was Mike Gallagher who said, and he said he was going to end at the end of his term. He wasn't going to run for re-election, but he said he's going to leave now on April 19th. Now, when that happens, they will have only one vote separating them from losing votes. Only one. They could only stand to lose one Republican. That's how slim the majority is. And Claudia Tenney, the Republican from New York, she was on Fox Business today, said, well, that's kind of selfish, Mike.
If he stays early, we can get the special election. It's a very safe Republican seat. Right. We'll add to our majority. We don't have the other special to fill Kevin McCarthy's seat until April 30th. And we were perilous. We could end up being having a Speaker Hakeem Jeffries in the interim here while we're waiting for special elections. First, personally, if you're going to make a commitment to the people that elect you, that you're going to serve for 2 years, unless you have a really good reason not to serve, then why would you do that? And aren't we Team Republican? I hate to be political here because it's a money show, but we're talking about money. Fox. We're talking about saving our economy. We're talking about all the things you talk about. Without the Republicans in office, we're going to lose all of these great things that we have as a country, self-governance, free market system. All those things are eroding away from us because we don't have a Republican.
You've got people.
So she's 100% correct. I'm glad she said it. I don't know if that will change Mike Gallagher's mind. I really don't know if it's going to change Gallagher's mind, but I hope it does. You ran for office. You said you were going to serve your term, and you're choosing not to. You're letting your constituents down. 1-800-465-8774, your texts.
You know who doesn't want to fund the reconstruction of Gaza? Everybody within 1,000 miles of the reconstruction of Gaza. The story they're not reporting tomorrow morning at 6 a.m. on The Brian Suit Show.
The Jason Rant Show.
Here to react, Seattle talk radio host Jason Rant.
And the rise of soft on crime laws and policies have made it worse.
Our man in the Pacific Northwest, Jason Rant, is on that.
And you keep on bringing these extraordinary stories from Seattle. It's amazing.
Long form.
Unfortunately, we're seeing a rise in juvenile crime all across Washington state. But in Renton, they're experiencing something basically unheard of for the city of Renton, at least. They looked at the data and said, yeah, we've got a really big crisis. Joining me on the line is the police chief of Renton PD, John Schult. Chief, thank you so much for coming on.
No, thank you so much for having me.
I have to imagine, just looking at some of these numbers, they're pretty shocking, both in percentage and just raw numbers, for the city of Renton to experience the type of crisis you guys are dealing with younger people. Can you take us through sort of big picture what it is you're seeing?
Anecdotally, we've heard through our officers that, God, we're seeing a lot more juveniles involved. But until we sat down and pulled our statistics and really provided the data, it really makes you take notice, sometimes doubling or tripling in the amount of crime that we could identify juveniles as being part of. And, I know it's not just exclusive to the city of Renton. That's really a regional issue that I know a lot of my other colleagues from other cities are dealing with the same issues.
Yeah, pretty much everyone is saying that they're seeing this. What's been so alarming is that, this isn't some 16-year-old stealing a Butterfinger from a 7-Eleven. This is a 16-year-old bringing a gun to that 7-Eleven and then committing an armed robbery. I mean, we're seeing a dramatic rise in violent crime.
Right. And I think, the prime example of that is a case we had last week that we put out on our media with three juveniles being taken into custody out of a stolen vehicle, which isn't a surprise, but then also having the a stolen handgun with them also, which, these are kids in the middle of the day. They're 15-year-olds. They should be in school, for God's sakes, not out joyriding in a stolen vehicle with a firearm on them also.
Yeah, and they went from 14 last year or the year before last to 63 stolen vehicles involved juvenile crime. When we're talking about juveniles, you know, I kind of expanded a little bit. It's not only juveniles, but we're seeing young adults up to, you know, 24, 25 years of age committing these kinds of crimes in an alarming way. Why do you think they're doing this? What do you think is behind the surge?
Yeah, you know, there's probably a whole lot of factors that play into it. And I'd hate to sit and point fingers at one organization or the other.
Sure.
What we really need to do is bring everyone together and kind of have a balanced approach to the accountability piece. And you say, yeah, it does include those young adults up to the early 20s. And, you know, I just see us, by not holding people accountable, we're really failing a generation and putting our communities at even more risk.
Well, let's talk about holding people accountable, because isn't one of the issues that let's say you get that 15-year-old, what can you do with that 15-year-old? Can you immediately question them, including if their mother gives them permission?
You know, that's a great point. No state law won't allow us to even question them. We have to contact an attorney first, and the attorney would have to provide us with consent to be able to ask them questions. Their parents couldn't even give us the ability or give us permission to ask them questions. It has to be through an attorney.
If you suspect a juvenile is involved in a crime, you have reasonable suspicion, can you connect with them at that point?
No, we'd still have to, you know, if we have reasonable suspicion, if we're going to question them in connection as a suspect with a crime, we'd still have to go through that same process of contacting an attorney.
Exactly.
and getting consent there.
Now, that seems to be a big part of the lack of accountability, right? I mean, how many cases could you guess a lawyer says to his suspect or his client who's your suspect, yeah, go ahead and talk freely to the police. They'll give you a pass.
Yeah, you made the point right there. I don't think any of them would.
Yeah. So, I mean, what role do you think has that played in just your ability to get after this crisis before it continues to spiral even more?
Right. I mean, kids understand that. It's kind of that lack of consequences or accountability right now. And they understand that what law enforcement can do is limited because of their age.
Have you had any conversations with the legislature, your representatives in Renton?
We, you know, through lobbyists, mainly WASPIC, we've been trying to make changes to that law. And I know it didn't occur this legislative session, but we're hoping to maybe make some changes in the next session.
Do you understand the argument that is made on the left on this? And I say right and left because in this case, I'm not aware of a single conservative who supported this bill or this law. Do you understand the arguments that they make that essentially it's unfair that you would have any conversation with a child who doesn't really know their rights? Their brains aren't even fully developed, so they don't understand that, you know, anything that is said to an officer could be used against them. That's usually the language that's put out there.
Right. And yeah, I understand the argument about the kind of physiological argument that juveniles don't have the cognitive ability or mental capacity to know right from wrong. And therefore, you know, if they're talking, you know, the statements they're making to officers, maybe, you know, that incriminate them in some way aren't fair for them to make. I understand the argument, but I also feel that, you know, with the blessing of a parent, they should be able to have those conversations with law enforcement.
Yeah, and the truth is sometimes you're having these conversations because they're one of many suspects, and your ability to maybe get some information from the individual suspect who you happen to apprehend could lead to apprehending the others who are out there and are potentially dangerous.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
We're talking with Renton PD Chief John Schultz. We're talking about the surge in juvenile-related crime in Renton. It's not just happening in Renton, of course, happening all across the country. You had made a point, I believe it was on the press release that you put out last week with the three 15-year-olds, that family plays a really big role in all of this, and having, you know, a family, a strong family bond could get in the way of that. Can you talk a little bit about what it is you meant?
Well, you know, and it's not just family, but yeah, that's a big piece of it. How can we support our youth going forward? It's about, you know, not only the accountability, but also making sure there's programs and resources, mm-hmm. counseling. I'm a big fan of our school resource officers being in the schools, acting as mentors, potentially getting upstream from some of the issues before they start, identifying any potential issues And getting the social services involved to work with the families before they're either the youth or young adult gets involved with the criminal justice system.
What are some of the things that they look out for when it comes to someone who might be going down that wrong path?
It could even be the peers that they're starting to hang out with, maybe the delinquency from school, the reports from other teachers about the falling off of grades, just even seeing what they're doing outside of the school.
How much of a problem has that been so far in Renton? I mean, is it easily diagnosable from that perspective of just, observing kids at school?
I think it's one of the approaches that we take. I mean, we have a great relationship with the Renton School District, and they're fully supportive of us having the officers in the schools to act as that mentor to help mm-hmm. kids when they're having problems. They oftentimes, even the family will call the school resource officer outside of his work hours to help get advice on issues they're dealing with. So it's really about just building those relationships with the community, with the kids, with the family members.
I'm so glad that you brought that up, the relationship part of all of this, because it's not just about being punitive. It's not the reason why you have school resource officers is not simply to, punish. It's to create a good relationship with student and law enforcement. And, we're seeing what's going on in the Seattle Public School District. We've got one school, Garfield High School, that's had a recent bit of gun violence there, and they're demanding support from the cops. And I'm like, well, you guys were the ones who kicked them off of campus because you said the kids would get triggered by the idea of an officer, that they feel traumatized the second that they see a uniform because of the claims being made around the BLM movement. It's just, but that's not what this is all about at all.
No, and you're 100% correct. We're not there for any punishment or enforcement for the most part, unless, someone's health or safety is in danger. We leave that to the school. We're really there to be that mentor, that leader in community, and to make those connections with the kids.
Did you guys ever really get the pushback from the public the way that some other school districts did?
We have not. Again, our school district and the school administration is very supportive of the police department. We work very well with them. We have a strong culture here at the Renton Police Department, even in the city of Renton community, as working together, hopefully to solve issues.
What's the biggest issue facing the department right now?
Honestly, it's what this is all about, and that's the violent crime and the increase that we're seeing in that.
Do you see it turning around anytime soon?
We're hoping so, and we put several measures in place with us trying to proactively look for suspects that are involved once we can identify them and get them off the street and get them incarcerated. It all comes down to the safety of our community and the public, and that's what our jobs are to do. And the best way of us doing that is to get out there and make mm-hmm. those arrests.
And do you have enough staff to be able to proactively police, community police, or are you guys constantly just responding to calls?
I think we're starting to turn around on that one a little bit. I would say probably a year ago, we were just responding to calls and barely treading water. Our staffing levels are starting to come up. We're starting to see an increase in the amount of candidates that were and actually really quality candidates that we're getting in the door, so we can start to build our force back up to the numbers that we were prior to 2019-2021.
Good. Well, hopefully we'll also return to what the number of juvenile crimes were around. I'd like to get that number to zero. I'm not going to hold my breath on that, but if we can just start to head in that direction, it would be a great thing.
Absolutely.
We were talking with Renton Police Chief John Schulte. Chief, thank you so much for stopping by. I really appreciate it.
All right. I appreciate it. Thank you very much, sir.
Absolutely. Thank you. You're listening to The Jason Rand Show. When we come back, we're going to dive into some quick hits.
The Jason Rand Show.
Let's bring in our man in the Pacific Northwest, KTTH, Seattle talk radio host Jason Rantz. Great to have you with us to tell people a little bit more about this.
Jason Rantz is in focus now.
Jason Rantz, thank you for your reporting on that.
The quick hit.
So a lot of political news happening today, and since we have a little bit more time than normal, I wanted to jump into some of that latest. Now, I don't think this is shocking news for a lot of folks because the news had leaked a little bit earlier last week, but we've got RFK Jr. He has announced who his VP choice is, and as we told you, it's Nicole Shanahan. Now, Nicole Shanahan is, for this purpose, best known as someone who's got a lot of money that she can pour into this particular campaign. And as an attorney, as an entrepreneur, she works in the tech space. She has a lot of appeal. But some of the thinking is, at least some of the reporting is, the thinking is that they can lean on her for funding in order to stay what they believe to be competitive. Getting on ballots, which is not easy. It's going to take a lot of money and a lot of energy. She's also, you know, someone who's a very competent business person. She checks some boxes from a Democrat perspective, which is what RFK Jr. really is. I know that he's trying to court some Republicans. He's very clearly not a Republican. He's very clearly a Democrat. But she checks some boxes for Democrat or progressive voters who maybe need to be wooed a little bit more. They're not really happy with Joe Biden, especially with the younger ones. They're disappointed in him. They don't think he's done a very good job. He hasn't lived up to promises. He's very clearly too old. And then there's that whole Israel scenario that they don't want to see continue to unfold, which is any kind of support of Israel's right to exist. Now, they look at RFK. This is another old white guy, although considerably younger than Joe Biden. So what do? They get a woman of color as the VP, and that's all that they see. That's the only reason I bring it up. I can care less. I've never heard of her. I'm sure she's very accomplished from based on what I've seen of her background, her resume. But that's all that young voters will see if they're progressives. And this just gives them a little bit more, you know, quote unquote, permission to go ahead and support her. So at this point, understand she's already been putting a whole lot of money into this campaign, like a lot of money. She put in, I believe, about $4 million early on in all of this to boost his super PAC. And again, we're going to expect that she continues. What's really interesting here is that Shanahan had previously donated to Marianne Williamson, who obviously is, I guess she's still running, but no one takes her seriously. But also she donated money to Pete Buttigieg. And this will really make folks happy on the radical left. She gave $150,000 to George Gascon and his 2020 election. This was where he decided to completely dismantle the criminal justice system and stop doing his job in Los Angeles County, leading to historic high rates of violence, where victims no longer matter. Now, just to give you a little bit of her background, she's the founder and president of something called Baya Echo Foundation. This is a private firm, according to Fox News, that says that it focuses on, quote, new frontiers in reproductive longevity and equality, criminal justice reform, and a healthy and livable planet. Talk about putting a whole lot of different issues, really not all that connected together. My God. Oof. Now, I suppose some people might know her. And now that I'm reading it, I vaguely remember this. She used to be married to the co-founder of Google. That ended because she, according to the reports, had an affair with Elon Musk. Now, both of them have denied that, but I recall that particular story. I couldn't remember it was who it was, but I vaguely remember this story. So, you know, maybe for some people she'll have a face that they recognize. Again, I'm assuming she's to get to that level of tech entrepreneur, having that kind of money to drop. Generally, that means you're pretty competent and confident in your skills and you present well, you're able to articulate a vision. And obviously, if you're RFK Jr., that's what you need help with, right? I mean, you have to convince people that this has a shot at winning this campaign. Now, it very clearly doesn't. It very clearly doesn't. And now you're hearing more voices, you know, start to sound the alarms. Rory Kennedy, who's RFK Jr.'s sister, was on CNN.
I feel strongly that this is the most important election of our lifetime.
By the way, for the love of all things holy, can we stop with that? Even if you think it's true, because every election, they say exactly the same thing. Every election. We were told that in the last election and then the election before that. Now, do I personally think this is higher stakes than normal? Yeah, 100%. Absolutely. But I don't usually go into any election saying, oh my God, this is the biggest, most important election ever in the history of the world. I don't do that. So when I say it, I think it means a little bit more. At least you know that I'm being honest. Everyone else says this all the time.
There's so much at stake. And I do think it's going to come down to a handful of votes in a handful of states.
Oh, gee, thanks.
And I do worry that Bobby just taking some percentage of votes from Biden could shift the election and lead to Trump's election.
I wholly disagree with that. I think she's 100% incorrect, and I think everyone should vote their conscience on the left. If you're upset with Joe Biden, I think if you vote for RFK Jr., it's a very good symbolic message that won't have any impact whatsoever on the election. And so I encourage you to follow your heart. Follow your principles. You say you're principled. It's not going to help Donald Trump, I promise. Meanwhile, speaking of helping Donald Trump, we can give a look at the polls that have recently come out. And again, we don't pay attention to any individual poll unless it shows something consistent with some of the other polling. And we just look at it and we say, oh, okay, we can see a trend line. I don't care about any of the national polls. I generally just throw those away because this is all going to, it's electoral college process. So Arizona, Bloomberg Morning Consult put out these numbers. Arizona has Trump up by 5. Georgia, Trump up by 7. He's up by 2 in Nevada, 6 in North Carolina. It is a tie in Pennsylvania, and we've generally been seeing that. The only outlier in this poll is Michigan, where they have it tied. They might have set this up in a previous poll to have Biden up, so it could bring him, it could be showing him going down. It's going to be close to Michigan, there's no doubt, but this one is a little bit of an outlier for him. The only place where Biden is up, it's by a point in Wisconsin. So Michigan, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, according to Bloomberg polls, it's all pretty much anyone's guess as to who will win. It's too close to call. But, you know, you go into Marist also put out a new poll, and this is the interesting one in Texas. And I always like to look at Texas because you've got these folks who want to pretend that it's a purple state and it could turn blue. We just need the right candidate. Yeah, they've been picking the quote-unquote right candidate this entire time, and they keep losing. Number one, he's up, but Trump is up by 12 points in Texas. It's going to be an easy win for him there. And also Ted Cruz, who's up for re-election. And he's been getting really high poll numbers. He can be divisive. There's no doubt about it because he's so, you know, he's authoritative, right? In the sense, not an authoritarian, but he has a presence. He talks about issues and actually gets out there, puts himself in the spotlight, and you either like it or you don't. I think he's very smart. He's been on the show a couple times. I'm a fan of his. He's up by 6 points in his reelection bid, according to Marist. Then when you go into the job approval, the latest numbers came out just a couple days ago from CNBC. Joe Biden is at 56% disapproval. So he's underwater by 17 points. When you look at Rasmussen reports, they have the disapproval rate very similar. They have Biden underwater by 18. So obviously not a good look. Now we're heading into this election, which means people will be focused on the big issues. One of them is immigration. We already spoke about it. The other one is just about inflation and the cost of living in the United States under Bidenomics. And as voters point out to Action 4 News out in Pittsburgh, they're a little struggling, right? They're struggling right now.
Oh, a lot. A lot. When things go up double compared to what it was last year, yeah.
You think so?
Yeah. Yes. We got the resources in this country. Let's use them.
Now, what they're talking about there that's doubling going up, it's gasoline, where a lot of people like to claim on the left, oh, gas prices are going down. They're going down from record highs. It's again, it's kind of like comparing today's crime record to the historic high that was hit last year and the year before, right? It just doesn't really make sense. We're looking to when things were good and people weren't complaining. And people weren't complaining about gas under Donald Trump because it was cheap. Here in Washington State, by the way, we are yet again, we are the second highest in the country, according to AAA, the average being $4.45. That's insane. That is absolutely insane. And the weird thing is, you can go into New York and Pennsylvania, where they're also complaining about gasoline prices. They're at, in Pennsylvania, $3.65. They think it's too expensive there. We would kill for that. We would kill for that. We, by the way, know how to get rid of about 50 cents off the price of gas per gallon. Oh, yeah, getting rid of the carbon tax, which you get to do this election with one of the initiatives, which I hope you'll do. You're listening to The Jason Rand Show.